1-0. Fly ball out to left. It's hit well, and it is gone. And we are tied in the ninth. Danny Jansen delivers a game-tying two-run home run in the ninth. Blue Jay fans explode out of their seats. Nathan Lucas loops one down the left field line. Fair ball into the corner. Varsho's got good speed. He's on his way around third, coming home, and he's going to score! Nathan Lucas with his biggest moment in the big leagues delivers a go-ahead double for the Blue Jays in the 10th, and it's 4-3 Toronto. The 1-1. Ground ball to the right side. Merrifield's got it. Over to first to finish the ball game. What a series for the Toronto Blue Jays. They were left for dead. Danny Jansen gave them life with a game-tying home run the ninth, and Nathan Lucas came through in his biggest moment in the major leagues with a go-ahead RBI double, and the Blue Jays pick up the lead in the 10th, and they win it 4-3.
Woo! I gotta be honest, that was probably the most comical way you could end a first half before the All-Star break.
No question.
My goodness. Daniele Franceschi alongside Jesse Rubinoff, the Fan Morning Show. Yes, this is weird. It's not Ailish. It's not Justin. They get the reprieve of being able to actually sleep and have a normal life for once. So you get Jesse and I on a Monday, bright and early. Jesse walked in. He said, oh, boy, it's a little early. I said, yeah, try doing this every day.
Yeah, no, producer Armin made the point that it feels like you're getting up to go to the airport. Like, that's the only other time that I see these hours. So, but I love it. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, the Blue Jays must be happy. I mean, they go into the break. They win 2 of 3 in Detroit. They get an Alek Manoah return. First off, this is supposed to be the slowest week in the sports calendar. Thankfully, we've got a lot of content because we had a wonderful weekend. There was a lot of baseball. There was also the draft last night. There was Canada soccer almost pulling off an incredible win, what would have been a momentous win against the United States. Close, but no cigar. But we got to, of course, we got to start with the Jays, Jesse. And 2 of 3. That game yesterday, 4-3, winning, extra innings, going to 10, pulling off. First off, the clip rolled, and credit to Josh. Nathan Lucas, my God, he looked even surprised that he hit the ball and laced a double. That was my first reaction yesterday. So he paused. I was like, oh, my God, it fell in. Like, it was incredible. So let's start there, because that win felt like a microcosm for the season up until this point.
Yeah, because you're pulling your hair out the entire game, and then suddenly they find a way to win. And you look at it, and you're thinking, there's just no chance. And coming off 2 days ago, before the no-hitter, they had 12 runs, 14 hits. And then they go and get no hit. And you're like, well, I don't understand. Which team is this? Like, where does the offense come from? And then they can't hit the ball. And then it's a second day in a row where they can't make contact. And you're thinking to yourself, like, what is this team? Who are they? Like, they've played for 3+ months now, and you can't figure out who the Toronto Blue Jays are. And then suddenly, out of absolute nowhere, Danny Jansen comes through. I mean, I shouldn't say nowhere, because Danny Jansen is incredibly clutch.
He's got a knack for that.
He does have a little bit of a knack for that. He's been incredibly clutch so far this season. But it's just another example of just, baseball is a funny game, and you can win in different ways. And the Toronto Blue Jays, this year's iteration at least, are finding different ways to win. Previous years, it was with power. And this year, it's pitching and defense. And the offense is sketchy, to say the least. I know we're going to give our midseason grades a little bit later in the show, but it's definitely sketchy. And there's not a lot of room when you're watching for, okay, they're going to do it here. There's not a lot of belief a lot of the games, because they haven't been able to string it together. And I'm sitting there watching the game yesterday, and I thought there was no chance they were winning that baseball game.
Oh, couldn't
no
agree.
Chance.
100%. Couldn't agree more. Also, especially when they get into a position where they're trailing late in a ball game, you're just like, all right, wrap it up, like, wash our hands clean of this, and
that's
let's
it.
Get ready for John Schneider postgame. So, wow, let's flush it and move on tomorrow. Like, I just, and that's
which
one of
said,
my
which he says after every
he's,
single loss.
Every time he's on Saturday, they get no hit. You know, it's the big leagues, it happens. So, John, you got no hit. It doesn't happen every day, it's sort of kind of unique, and it's pretty bad that it comes against a lowly team that's 10 games under 500. I even forgot about the no-hitter, of all things. My goodness. So, yes, they go from one extreme to the next. They sandwich a no-hitter in between, of all things. So you get Manoah, you get a no-hitter, and you get this wild comeback at the end, late in the game on Sunday. They had up through six innings, it was Whit Merrifield who had two hits. They scored four runs on three combined hits the rest of the way, which is crazy to think that they come away from that game where they had no business winning it. They kind of steal it on the road. And here they are, All-Star break, 50 and 41. It's pretty bizarre. The weekend as a whole, I would say this is how I would summarize it. Jekyll and Hyde. I even wrote it in my notes that you talked about the offense and the approach. Up until Jansen whips that two-run homer to tie the game in the ninth, I wrote, juvenile approach. Juvenile approach. Like, how is this team going out there? They had up until, what, that point, one run of offense over two games, which is crazy to me. But here we are, and this is a reality. I do not understand this team.
I just keep making the same comparison over and over and over again to the Toronto Raptors and how they're just difficult to watch at times, the Toronto Blue Jays. We saw with the Raptors this past season, couldn't shoot, and when you can't shoot in the NBA, that's going to cause you some problems, and it's not always going to be the most aesthetically pleasing product. And with the Toronto Blue Jays, when you're not hitting home runs or you're not scoring runs at a crazy clip, they are still scoring, and they are still getting hits. They're actually up there in terms of batting average in the majors, but they're not cashing in guys with runners in scoring position. So sometimes it just looks like not a great on-field product because you want to see, it's an entertainment business and you want to see runs being scored. But at the end of the day, wins matter the most. And it's not necessarily how you do it, but how many you can get. And I sitting there watching this team, I think you could look at this record and say, it feels like their record is probably 10 to 15 games better than what the actual feeling of watching this team actually is. Like 50 and 41, it could flip that around, and that is what it feels like to me.
No question. I couldn't agree more. It's also stunning to me. They have five All-Stars. Now, Romano was added as a
replacement.
He was a replacement yesterday for Framber Valdez. But five guys, and Kevin Gausman said, thank you, but I ain't going. That was his thing on the weekend. He's like, I appreciate the kind invitation. Thank you very much, but I'm going to stay at home. So that's technically Vladdy, Whit Merrifield, Bo Bichette, Jordan Romano, and Kevin Gausman. But all of that, when you put it all together, it, like you said, it really doesn't feel that way. And it feels like this is a team that, in a lot of ways, and I want to pose this question to the text line as well. Mm-hmm. If there was one word to describe this first half or this unofficial first half leading into the All-Star break, how would you describe it? How would you describe the Jays season up until this point? And the word that kept popping into my mind, at least, feel free to text it in 590-590, unfulfilling.
Yeah.
They're nine games over, but it's unfulfilling. Like, to your point, you watch them, it's a hard watch. There's a lot of awkwardness there. Nathan Lucas has a moment. It's fourth major league hit, his second career RBI. And I was like, oh boy, God almighty, is that going to drop? Oh, it dropped in. Oh my God.
You know what it is? It doesn't feel like it's sustainable. That's why. Mm-hmm. Like you're relying on Danny Jansen clutch home runs and Nathan Lucas balls that are dropping in over the right field line. Like that's not what you anticipated this season being. And I think credit to the front office, they put together a roster. There were reasons why the expectations were very high for this team. But for whatever reason, you put some of the parts together, it hasn't been good enough, which is hilarious to say because they're currently in a playoff spot. I guess the more fair description would be it hasn't been what you would expect. If I was to think of one word to describe the season so far, it would be maddening because you feel like they should be up there with the Rays based on the talent, but the offense, they just have not been able to put it together. But the offense, you can look at that, but on the other side, the pitching and defense and the bullpen, those things are papering over the offensive deficiencies pretty significantly. Again, the bullpen yesterday.
Oh, nails.
Like, unbelievable. Yeah. Like, you're coming into the season and you think, okay, if there's going to have to be an area at the trade deadline where the Blue Jays are going to have to address, you're thinking, okay, for a third straight trade deadline, it's probably going to have to be the bullpen. And, yeah, they might decide to add to it because you can never have too many bullpen arms. But, again, yesterday, six innings, two hits, no earned runs, no walks, seven strikeouts for the bullpen. And this is a bullpen that's fifth in the majors in ERA. And I don't think anybody would have anticipated the Blue Jays bullpen being one of the best in the majors, but that has helped paper over the deficiencies in the offense this season. It's been great.
And you mentioned the starting pitching. Yep. They're top three in quality starts in baseball. Big reason, Kevin Gausman deserves a lot of credit. Oddly enough, and I mean, he got obviously no run support. They didn't get a single hit for him on Saturday. They literally did nothing.
He doesn't get any run support, Kevin Gausman.
He's got the second lowest average run support in baseball. It's like 3 runs a game that the Jays are averaging in his starts, which is crazy because he's been one of the best pitchers in baseball.
Sad for him.
It's very sad. It's unfortunate for a guy that's in the Cy Young conversation. Yeah. Every time he goes out there, it's like, I got to throw perfect in order to have a chance to win games here. I have one major quibble. Saturday was embarrassing.
Yeah.
My major quibble, Jesse, Kevin Biggio hitting fifth. I do not know which khaki, as Kevin Barker calls them, the khakis, which khaki is responsible for that, but they deserve, that's a fireable offense. Like, how is Kevin Biggio hitting higher in the lineup than Whit Merrifield, who hits leadoff the next day? That made no sense to me. I was scratching my head, and I was just like, oh boy, that's another one where, I mean, I don't know how you justify it. Talk about sustainability. The fact that we're at a point, and this is the part that's frustrating. You're seeing Kevin Biggio get rolled out almost every other day in this lineup. And that's why, to me, it's unfulfilling because you look at the group and you're saying, all right, there's a lot more to extract here. There's still a lot more to extract here. But at the same time, there's a lot of flaws. And that's why I think the record, in a lot of ways, is deceiving. We're going to do our grades momentarily, but I do want to pivot this conversation into Manoah because I thought that was maybe the biggest story. They get no hit. They take the 2 of 3. They kind of steal the 2 of 3. But Manoah on Friday, and we talked about it all week last week, here he is. He's coming back. 2 minor league starts, has the stint after the demotion. I mean, what did you make of his return on Friday night against the Tigers?
You know the meme, I think I got my swagger back? That felt to me like it was a good description for Alek Manoah. I'm just happy for him that he had sort of the joy back pitching from the mound because it felt like earlier this season that's something that escaped him and something that he feeds off of. Feels like a big energy guy when he's hopping around on the mound, sort of like Marcus Stroman was back in the day. That's when he's at his best. But when he was getting knocked around, there's no jumping around on the mound. There's no smiling. There's no shimmying after strikeouts. There's none of that. But I feel like he got a little bit of that back, which is very key because his stuff was okay. It wasn't great. The velocity on the fastball was still down a little bit. The slider was no hits off the slider, which is a big step in the right direction. But I just think the joy was missing from Alek Manoah. And when he was able to limit the damage to the first couple of innings, got to the third, could have potentially run into some issues in the third, but didn't let it spiral under control, which is a very, very good sign. I think from there, he was able to say, okay, this is going to be a little bit different than the other previous starts that I had prior to going down, and we can move forward from this as a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I thought the swagger was the biggest thing, and you could see it sort of even building as the start progressed where he got more and more and more confident. He comes out in the first a little bit shaky. You could see the energy was there. He made some adjustments. Like, if we talk about the actual stuff, to your point, slider, a little bit better. Not much appreciably better, I would say. Fastball, velocity unchanged compared to when he came back or when he was on the major league roster prior to the demotion. But he goes 6, he gives up 5 hits, only 1 run, and strikes out 8. And the biggest thing I thought was not walking anybody.
Yeah.
Because that was a huge issue. The command was a huge problem for him. 19 first pitch strikes out of the 23 batters he faced.
Career high for him, yeah.
Exactly. So I thought there were a lot of important positive steps taken for him. Now, the natural caveat, a lot of people say, well, it was Detroit. And that is, it's a feeble lineup. I get it. It's still a major league lineup. That would be my only pushback to those people that are skeptical is that, hey, it is still a major league lineup.
Yeah, Jay's got no hit the next day.
100%. Yeah. John Schneider would say, hey, it's a major league. It happens. Right?
Yeah.
But no, seriously. And I that's why I would say there's a lot of encouraging signs there. But the biggest thing was that his confidence seemed to be at least back, and he looked like, to your point, the joy was there. Even seeing him smile in the dugout there in between innings and after he finished his start, you could see it was almost like a relief. It was a big swing. That was it was a big gamble for them.
Yeah.
Huge gamble for them to bring him up at this juncture. It paid off.
I had a conversation with one of my coworkers, the day before the start of Manoah. And I said, what do you think constitutes a good start? And he said, 6 innings, one earned run. I said, well, six innings, one earned run. What? Like, that's an excellent start for Alec Manoah. And he said, no, I'm feeling it. I think that's what's going to happen. And I said, well, if Manoah can go like five and give up three runs, I think I'd be pretty satisfied, step in the right direction. And lo and behold, he was right. Victor, shout out, because six innings, one run is exactly what you got from Alec Manoah. But I think moving forward, I think we still have to temper the expectations because we just had the conversation about the stuff. The stuff still needs a little bit of work, and he's not going to go against the Detroit Tigers every single start out. So he's still going to have to get a little bit better here. The stuff's going to have to improve from here on out. And I think if they can get the five innings, three runs from Manoah every fifth day, what it does for the rest of the team, for the rest of the rotation, to save the bullpen, this is huge. You've heard Kevin Gausman talk about the workload and Chris Bassitt talk about the workload. And Trevor Richards was making starts, and now he's able to go back to the bullpen. So the trickle-down effect from having a serviceable Alec Manoah, you don't even need him to be at his Cy Young level. You just need a serviceable pitcher because the rest of the rotation has been able to carry the slack. You need a healthy and rested to some extent bullpen and the rest of the pitchers in the starting rotation to continue to do what they've been doing, and you're going to be okay. You're going to give your team more often than not a chance to win, and that's basically all you can ask for. To expect Alec Manoah of last year to return, I think, is wishful thinking and too much to ask for. But if you can get five and three runs or six and four runs, I think there's a ways around that you can make it work.
On Friday, I was filling in for JD, and I said, five and dive, and you'd be happy.
Yeah, exactly.
And instead, they got six and a quality start. So I think, you could just about as well as they could have drawn it up. Like, that was ideal in a lot of ways. The stuff needs to improve, clearly. Like, I think it's clear. He left a lot of stuff over the plate. He was struggling arm side with his slider and changeup. His delivery looked a lot better, like more fluid.
Yeah.
It was a lot quicker too.
Definitely,
you can notice that he had better tempo to his delivery, which made a difference. It seemed. I don't know. It's just I felt like it was a big risk, but given what we heard from all those guys you named, and Barrios being another guy, where they're skipping bullpens and they're not complaining, but you heard them mention numerous times about how taxing it was having only a four-man rotation, essentially. It was like they had almost no choice. Or at least they felt they didn't have a choice, that they were tempted to bring him back, even if it was early. And I don't know if I necessarily agree with that philosophy. I'm just happy it didn't come back to bite them, because my concern going in was, what if it goes terribly wrong? Which it didn't, but what if it would have went terribly wrong? What happens then? What is the next recourse for this? And quite frankly, I don't think they had one. Like, I think this was it. Like,
that's what makes me uncomfortable 100%. About this whole situation, right? Because
what's left? There's nothing in the cupboards. There's no reinforcements, except unless you're banking on Hyunjin Ryu, he made another rehab start yesterday. Good for him. In high A, looking good.
Don't get carried away.
Exactly. Like, let's not get carried away, because the last time we saw him on a major league mound, he struggled, and it's been over a year since he's pitched. So to think that he's going to come in and be the savior of this rotation, or would have filled that void, I don't know. I think it's wishful thinking. And Manoah gives you still, I think, a higher upside compared to that, even right now.
Yeah, I think if Manoah comes back and struggles, it exposes, or even if he doesn't, it exposes the front office for not building up the depth in the starting rotation. Like, that's just the fact of the matter, because you look at how great the performances have been elsewhere in the pitching rotation. What happens if someone gets hurt?
Exactly.
What do you do?
Yes.
And to this point, it's been crazy that they've managed to stay as healthy as they've been. Right. So the only reason a pitcher in the starting rotation has missed starts is because of performance, because Manoah wasn't good enough.
They've been
so
healthy.
What was the plan? You have to anticipate that someone's got Mitch White. That's not going to happen anymore. So what are they going to do? You're going to be looking at, I think, if Ryu or Manoah struggle ahead of the August 1st trade deadline, you're going to be looking at another journeyman, because they don't have enough to go and get a big fish.
Yep.
They don't have it. Like you said, the cupboard's bare. This is not the same farm system that you had in previous years. According to Fangraphs, it's 24th in baseball.
Yeah.
Like, that's not good enough, right? So I'm a little surprised that nothing was done, even to this point, with Manoah being down in the minors for a month. I'm surprised nothing was done to supplement the pitching rotation, because you're still left in a situation here where if any one of the guys that are in the rotation gets injured, what do you do? You're just going to bring back Trevor Richards and be in the same spot, and all your players are telling you that it's taxing? Like, you have to address it somehow. And granted, there is still 3 weeks until the trade deadline, but that is a glaring need for this team moving forward, I would think. They've been able to get away with it so far, but I think it's asking a little bit too much. What happens if after August 1st someone gets hurt?
Yeah.
Then what do you do?
Exactly.
Like, who starts? Yep. You're going to be in the stretch run in September and not have a fifth starter?
Trevor Richards?
Like,
rolling out there?
I know. It doesn't make any sense.
No, I agree. I couldn't agree more. And speaking of which, you brought up how, look, they've, and this is the part that's actually a bit scary, is the fact that they haven't had really an injury. It wasn't until Manoa had to go down for performance-based reasons that they had to use a sixth starter.
Correct.
Right? Everybody else has been there, present and accounted
That's
for
right.
and consistent for the most part. Kikuchi even delivering as a bit of a revelation for you, where you had huge red flags and question marks about him coming in. And then the rest, those guys have been flawless. They've stabilized your rotation. Barrios has come in and has rebounded nicely from last year. So you've checked all those boxes with all these guys. But that is probably the most concerning part, is you actually haven't had to deal with a situation where you could say, well, our team hasn't been whole yet. No, they have been whole. Mm-hmm. And look at what happened even over the last 2 days. George Springer being on the paternity list. How that lineup looks drastically different. My God, the holes in that lineup. When you remove one guy. So imagine, speaking of which, imagine removing one piece of that puzzle from the lineup. What that does to that team. Because, my goodness, you look at the lineup yesterday and the lineup on Saturday, you're saying, and maybe that's why Kevin Biggio ends up hitting fifth, but you're looking there and you're saying, oh, my God, this is horrible. This would be awful if somebody gets hurt or for whatever reason somebody's really struggling. You're putting so much weight on just a few small number of guys that it's hard to sustain that and to have a high ceiling as a team.
Yeah.
Because your lineup is not threatening once you get past the top three, four guys in your order.
No, it's a great point, and the lineup hasn't been threatening at all with everybody healthy. And I think it puts like an undue amount of pressure on the big bats in the lineup to perform when you have holes like that. You have a situation where George Springer goes on the paternity list. Like, who's going to score? And you saw that manifest itself. Who's going to score? You need to have bigger bats in the lineup, and you have to have the big bats perform. And for a large portion of the season, you've had Vladimir Guerrero, I guess, underwhelming would probably be a word, although you look at his numbers and it's not horrible. It's just not, I think, what Blue Jays fans expected. But you need Bo Bichette to be as good as Bo Bichette is advertised. You need Vladimir Guerrero to be as good as he can possibly be. You need George Springer when he's around to contribute probably more than he's done. You need all of these contributions because the lineup is not as deep as you probably would have thought. You remove one piece, like you said, and that pressure ratchets up even more on the guys that are in the middle of the order. And I think that's a difficult way to win baseball games.
Oh, very difficult. It puts so much, and we've talked about it, puts so much pressure on your pitching. Look at what the meat of the order, the heart of this Jays order, what they did over the weekend, Saturday and Sunday specifically. Bo went 0 for 7. This is without George Springer in the lineup. Bo goes 0 for 7. Vlad 0 for 7. Kirk 0 for 7. Belt 0 for 3 on Saturday. I mean, that's essentially the heart of your order. Chapman had a nice game yesterday. He was hitless, of course. Everybody was hitless on Saturday. But aside from that, who else are you banking on to provide offense, right? It's a very uninspiring lineup. And the problem is, as we touched on, and we'll transition this into our grades here too, but the problem is you don't have the assets to actually supplement the lineup further. And quite frankly, why don't we start here? If we look at the snapshot, 9 games over, right, in a playoff spot. But if I asked you, what are they missing, Jesse? Like, if I said right now, what is the difference between this team being a fringe playoff team and actually being a contender right now come October? What are the pieces they are missing that you would say, yeah, if they go out and do this at the trade deadline, this is going to vault them over the top?
Power.
Okay.
Which is exactly what they had last year, and then they subtracted.
Yeah.
Which I don't necessarily think is that fair, because the front office basically listened to the fan base. The fan base was telling you last year that they wanted, well, if you need to subtract some power in favor of defense, then let's do it. And that's exactly what the front office went out and did. But Now, after seeing the results through the first half of the season, I think fans are like, maybe we should have kept some of the power because the Blue Jays don't hit home runs and it's not as fun and it's not as inspiring to watch and that sort of thing. So, yeah, if you can go out and get a power bat, but I realize that that is not necessarily something that's going to happen because how do you get a power bat when you don't have the prospect capital to go and do it? So I just think what you see is what you get with this team. You're going to need the approach to change in the second half. They're going to have to get better offensively if they're going to win. Like, yes, they can continue to win with pitching and defense, and oftentimes come playoff time, that is how you win. But something's got to give here with the offense where you can't have these games where you need seven singles in a row to score. Like, that's not a sustainable way to play baseball. And I think people probably overlooked that when they said, okay, we'll sacrifice some power for better pitching and better defense and a more professional, mature approach, right? Because that's what everyone was saying last year.
Oh, yeah.
Stop smiling.
Yes.
Stop
too
with
much
the home
fun.
Run jacket. Too much fun. All this stuff. We're good. So they brought in Kevin Kiermaier. They brought in Brandon Belt. Yeah. They brought in Dalton Varsho for his defense and probably better offense than he's provided them so far. But they made the changes that the fan base is clamoring for, which you don't always see. You often see the front office trying to sell the fan base something that's their vision. But they actually went out and changed the team fundamentally from what it was previously. But it's crazy to say this because they're 9 games over 500, but it has not worked out as they envisioned.
No question. It's a good point. They went out, they did to have a fundamental paradigm shift with their vision and approach. And it's so bizarre.
Worked.
Also, I mean, it is bizarre. I mean,
it's so weird. Ross, they're 9 games over 500.
Yeah, we're sitting here, we're like, oh, doom and gloom in a lot of ways. But no, it's fair. Before we assign our letter grades, why don't we hear from John Schneider, the skipper, in terms of how he feels about his team right now heading into the All-Star break.
We've put ourselves, you know, right in the middle of a playoff hunt, and I think that there's things that we can all, you know, collectively say we could be a little bit more consistent at. But, I mean, the guys, you know, when you look back at the last, 91 games, is it? 92? I mean, 91? I mean, it's been a battle. You know, we've been on the road a lot, and, you know, it's been a grind, you know. So I think to be in this position is great. You know, enjoy the time off and hopefully, you know, hit the ground running when we do get home. But it's been a little bit of a roller coaster, but such is life in the big leagues.
Such is life. He forgot how many games they played. John forgot how many games they played. John, it's 91.
Takes it day to day.
Yeah,
I kind of respect that.
Okay, yeah.
Live in the moment.
Yeah, well, he flushed half of them. So that's what happened. All right, let's start with offense, Jesse. I'll turn it over to you. Let's get your letter grading here. I think you're going to be more generous to me, but let's start with the offensive side of the ball.
You think so?
Yeah, I do. What do you got?
All right, offense, I'm going C.
Oh, okay, we're identical.
Which it feels like they should be an F, but when you look into the numbers, they're actually like, they're just average.
Yes, they are.
They're an average offense. Like, they're fifth in hits, sixth in average, which is good, 25th in strikeouts, which is kind of ridiculous when you watch this team. But then they're 22nd and with runners in scoring position, 16th in home runs, 16th in RBI. I think we focus a lot on the bad because of the difference in watching this team from previous years. But they're just a kind of a middling average offense. What you see is what you get. You're going to need more contributions from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. So the definition of average when it comes to letter grades is C. So that's why I'm giving it a C.
That's a C average. Okay. Yeah. All right. I would say if I had a C in school, I'd be pretty.
Well, you know what I mean.
Well, I agree with you. I C is my grade as well. Bad with runners in scoring position. That's been a big bugaboo for them all year.
Yeah.
Power is down, and the approach has been inconsistent. I said juvenile. I wrote it down. I will stand by that. The offenses look feeble at times and anemic like it did for most of yesterday, too. So C is my letter grade. Defense, what do you got?
Defense, A minus.
Okay.
According to Fangraphs, the Blue Jays are number one in defensive runs saved. They're basically exactly how the front office envisioned this defense. But Kiermaier and Varsho, both in the top 10, depending on what site you look at in defensive runs saved individually, could be in the top five. 13th in the league in errors, 8th in stolen bases allowed. Look, they wanted to make defense a priority this year, and they have succeeded for the most part. I look at Bo Bichette. Even he is getting better at shortstop. So there have been improvements from what you had as holdovers from previous years. But also the guys that you brought over have done a lot to stabilize the offense. And I think that's a real good thing moving forward for the Toronto Blue Jays. The defense has been great.
I agree completely. I gave him a B+. The defense has been better in the outfield with those new additions and those changes, no question about it. Moving Springer to right field as well. Seems like he's found a real comfort zone out there, which oddly enough, people forget. He actually played a lot more right field in Houston than he did center field. Mm-hmm. So everybody anointed him as the starting center fielder.
He's been fabulous there.
He's been awesome. Yeah. And he actually has a better track record in playing in right than in center, even dating back to his Houston days. So I couldn't agree more. The infield, I mean, when you go look from left to right, I mean, Vladdy's made himself a Gold Glove caliber first baseman. Coming off the Gold Glove last
year. Say Chapman.
Right, Chapman on the 100%. And Chapman at the hot court. He's been so good. Consistently, that's the biggest asset you have in terms of what he brings to the table is how good he is defensively. So that's definitely one of their strengths. Now, there are a lot of miscues still that occur, and they've struggled at times with managing base runners. There's no doubt about that. Feel like that's a little bit more on the pitching, too, in terms of their delivery to the plate and holding runners. But aside from that, defensively, it's the changes that they made have paid dividends in that regard because they have been better. The front office, I thought this was an interesting one. The front office, how would you grade the way the front office has constructed this roster, perhaps some of the changes and moves that they've made up until this point, or lack thereof? How would you assess their performance?
This one was the most difficult to assess of all the letter grades. I gave them a B-.
Oh, okay.
They did a solid job replacing Ross Stripling with Chris Bassitt.
Yep.
You could argue that it was more than solid. The Varsho deal, I think, is far too early to say. But he, like I said, with the defensive run saved, that is what they wanted from him. They just need him to contribute a little bit more with the bat. Obviously, Kevin Kiermaier, I think, has come in and stabilized things as well. The bullpen has been fantastic, which I think a lot of people prior to the season were on the front office about. And the front office said, hey, we think we have the horses. And so far, that has paid dividends as well. Now, here's where things go a little bit south for me. And the reason it's not any higher than a B- is because, as we talked about, the depth behind the Alek Manoah situation really, really got exposed. And the fact that they're 50-41 while dealing with their ace being down in the Florida Complex League is unbelievable. But you need to address the starting pitching moving forward because it's not something that's sustainable. At the same time, Fangraphs giving them 24th in farm system rankings means that there isn't that much there. And who's responsible for the farm system? It's the front office. Mm-hmm. So when I'm looking at the negatives, it's depth. It's the building up of the farm system, which I think has left a lot to be desired. And there have been high expectations from this team, and rightfully so. They're in a playoff spot. They've done a solid job, and solid to me is B-.
Okay.
Go for it.
You were generous.
Yeah, okay.
A little bit more than I was. A C.
Okay.
The only thing I could come – the main thing I had was flawed roster construction. Flawed roster construction, too many holes up and down the lineup. So I asked you the question earlier, what are they missing? You said power. When I look at it, I'm like, so power is encompasses part of my answer. They don't have a true cleanup hitter, so they're missing a guy. Where are those 25 homers and 100 stakes coming from? They're not there right now. They're missing they're still missing swing and miss in the bullpen. And a true power arm that can be a legitimate eighth inning guy. Eric Swanson, to me, is nice as a seventh inning guy. Mm-hmm. He should not be your setup guy. I think you can make do with Jordan Romano as your closer. He's been awesome the last couple years.
They thought Jimmy was the eighth inning guy.
Wow. You know, and
that hasn't worked out.
Clearly, they thought wrong.
Yeah.
Because Jimmy has not been very good. And so I think even coming into the season, I still felt that way, too, about you're missing swing and miss. You're missing the power arms in the back end of your bullpen still. Because we had Adam Simber and Trevor Richards and these guys that aren't exactly the most inspired. And you know what? In fact, they even to some extent, Nate Pearson has come on to actually really buoy that bullpen.
That's really
he's
helped.
Really helped
Definitely.
Them a lot because he's been a reliable asset back there. Mm-hmm. And you know what? High leverage or not, depending, like he's been serviceable. So that's been a huge hit for them. But to me, it goes back to looking at the lineup. There are too many holes. When Brandon Belt is hitting third in your order, all due respect to Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro, you're not winning anything.
Let me ask you a question. Did you think the roster construction was as flawed as you think it is right now coming into the season?
Yeah, I had very major concerns.
Yeah.
Major concerns about it because of the lack of offense and this natural assumption that these guys were just all of a sudden, a lot of these guys outside of, first off, there was a lot of weight being placed on Bo, Vlad, and George Springer, mm-hmm. right? Those three guys saying, well, if they play up to their capabilities, they'll be fine still to is. Carry the offense, yeah. right? But that being said, when you put so much pressure on three guys to perform and there's nine guys in your lineup, it then makes it easier for the opposing team to also lock in on those three guys. Look at, they have no protection for Vlad. And that's part of, I think, the issue is, yeah, he's had his struggles, but if you're not supplying him with the appropriate protection and insulating him correctly, how is he going to get pitches that he can hit? How can he take advantage of situations where he's got runners on base? With Vladdy, it's not even about the average or anything for me. It's not even about what the production is. It's when the production comes. It's about not having empty calories when he's driving in runs when they're up a bunch or down a bunch. It's about being in situations like we saw against Oakland or in big moments where you're down a couple runs and you need a big hit and you get a couple runners on and he can deliver in that situation. But they don't have the pieces around him right now, insulating him, Bo, that are allowing them to really, really excel and capitalize on their run-producing potential. So that's a big flaw for me. You know, Kevin Barker said last year, Alejandro Kirk was their cleanup hitter for most of the year last year. He said it very early on in the season. If Kirky is your cleanup hitter, you're not winning anything. Mm-hmm. And I still think that holds true today. If Brandon Belt's hitting third in your lineup, you're not winning anything, whether he's third or cleanup or whatever. Varsho hit cleanup on opening day. Like, how we had this, everybody just had this natural assumption that he was going to go from being this 220 hitter with 20 home runs. He's on pace to do what he did last year for the most part. And all of a sudden, become this guy that's hitting 250, 260. Same thing with Matt Chapman. A career, 240, 250 hitter? All of a sudden, he's going to be this godsend offensively? It doesn't work that way. And in fact, he gave them a lot in April. But it just doesn't happen that way. That's why I had a lot of question marks coming in. And I felt like they subtracted offense, but they didn't replace it adequately enough to give them a true whole roster.
I think that's fair. I think they probably were expecting more from Dalton Varsho specifically, because you look 27 home runs a year ago, which actually is more than Teoscar Hernandez had a year ago. So when you think about that, just what you're adding and what you're subtracting, you think you should get around the same production. And that obviously has not transpired exactly how the Blue Jays front office envisioned. So to your point, the power is not there, and I don't see how it's going to come, which makes me think scoring runs is going to be difficult for this team no matter what. Runs are going to come at a premium, but it's about, can you paper over the offensive deficiencies with the pitching? Yep. And they have been able to do that so far, and that's why they're 50-41.
Last one. Yep. We've gushed about the pitching a lot, so we'll skip the rotation and the bullpen. We'll just do one more here, because I think this is another polarizing one. John Schneider.
Mm-hmm.
What would you assess, and what grade would you assign John Schneider for his first half in his first full season as the manager?
Well, despite not knowing how many games they played, I rather like the job that John Schneider is done. I'm going to give him the same grade that I gave the front office,
okay,
which is a B-. I enjoy how he's always positive, despite many fans, I think, clamoring for more honesty. The fact of the matter is we don't know what he says to the team. And I think that not airing your dirty laundry in the media, I really do believe that there's something to be said for that. Obviously,
they had that one, if you recall, that one little moment about the players only meeting.
Yeah.
And you could see it rubbed some of those guys the wrong way because he outed it to the media.
Exactly.
And that was only, to your point, the only moment I think we've seen from him where it was a bit of a dissent of some kind.
Right. And I think what the front office has done, you brought over a lot of veteran leadership this offseason. And I think there's something to be said for the players, for the most part, handling those sorts of things themselves within the clubhouse. So I think They have asked John Schneider to be the smooth hand that guides this franchise forward. And I think he's done an excellent job in the media with that. Obviously, he's had some high profile gaffes, namely coming out for a mound visit for Alek Manoah. Like, that obviously cannot happen. We know that. There have been day-to-day lineup issues. There have been day-to-day bullpen moves that maybe I've disagreed with. But on the whole, you're not going to find a single manager in all of Major League Baseball where you're not going to have those exact issues with. The lineup day-to-day, the bullpen moves. you can find flaws with every single manager. And that's why I find it kind of ridiculous to really, you know, look down upon the job a manager has done. So I think for the most part, John Schneider's did a pretty good job, and B minus is where I'm going.
We're pretty close. I got a C plus.
Yeah.
I think he's had his moments where he's really struggled, and it's noticeable. He's had those viral gaffes, as you've talked about. My prevailing takeaway, though, still, when I and we talked about the inconsistencies on both sides here, my prevailing takeaway is the whole premise of, you know, John Schneider replacing Charlie Montoyo and the changes they made in terms of even the personnel, everything has been about making this more serious. Like, the focus needs to be more about winning and less about the fun, and they take away the home run jacket and all these things. And yet it's still, to me, a very unserious team because they make errors and mistakes, especially on the bases, that you shouldn't make if you're a team that's legitimately thinking about winning games. You cannot give away free outs, and this team does it too frequently. To me, some of that has to fall on the manager and the way that you're, because we never see these guys get disciplined either. Like, they're never being disciplined for making these mistakes other than John Schneider going over and being like, hey, pal, like, you know, you made a mistake. Like, other than that, we're never seeing guys pull from games. We're never seeing guys sat down and said, hey, you cannot do that. And I'm a big Whit Merrifield guy. He just runs into too many outs. And I love Whit, and I'm a big proponent of Whit. And I think he should be in the lineup every day, should be featured prominently, whether even possibly hitting leadoff and moving Springer down, all these things. But when those mistakes happen, you got to have repercussions for those actions. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. So in terms of policing the team, he's got the respect of that group, no question. But at times I feel like he can do a better job of making sure that he stays on top of those things. And also the urgency factor. There's too many times, and we joked about it, but for me, I listen to the post every day, and I'm like, John, can you for once come out and please say, our approach stinks, our approach sucks, or we made a bad mistake here, and that cannot happen. We cannot tolerate that. And I feel like at times he's missed the boat and missed the mark in those areas. Look, people in New York would have said last year they would have been a Buck Showalter. Unbelievable. Yeah. Look what they're saying about him now. So I get it changes quickly, and really you're at the mercy of your players, but C-plus for me. That's where I'm at with John Schneider. C-plus. Serviceable, not fantastic.
No, I think it's fair, and I think the attention to detail was something that they talked about ad nauseum during spring training, and we saw the behind-the-scenes footage of John Schneider giving speeches where he said, okay, attention to detail is the key for this season, and we're going to go to the next level and all this stuff. And that is a very fair criticism. I put more pressure on the players when it comes to actually executing, because there's no question if – attention to detail was a focus during spring training. There's only so much that John Schneider can do. He's not the one playing. So that's why we put more responsibility on the players actually executing on the field. But to your point, you're right. Like, if that's what you're preaching and you're not following through on the field, there have to be some sort of repercussions. I'll go back to what I said earlier in the sense that we don't know what's being said off camera. There are plenty of cameras in the dugout, so I'm not sure from a manager perspective you want to just be reaming out your players in the dugout.
Why not? It'd be fun.
Everybody's watching. It would be incredible entertainment, and we have seen it in the past, but in this case, I think he's got such a good relationship. So much of managing in baseball is managing relationships, egos, players on the team, and we don't know how that's going, which makes it so hard to judge a manager. All we can really look at is, to your point, how the players are executing the message and the lineup and the bullpen decisions, and really it just makes it hard to grade a manager until they're gone and you start hearing all the dirty laundry about it.
100%. No, that's totally fair. I think we did a good job of breaking it down and going through different touch points with this team up until this point. The Jays made a draft pick last night. Arjun Namala, 20th overall. We'll touch on that a little bit later. Canada losing in the CONCACAF Gold Cup quarterfinals. Alex DeBrincat's going to Detroit. We've got Frank Saravalli on later. We're going to talk to him about that. Lots to come here on the Fan Morning Show. Daniele and Jesse, let's take a bit of a break. When we come back, we will do the A-list. I will honor A-list, and we will continue the tradition of keeping the A-list alive. So let's take a break. A-list after this.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now, it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong,
bing bong,
bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Oh, I like hearing that track. It's different from this seat, I gotta admit. Usually I'm behind the glass with Josh, Elaine, Armin, our crew behind the glass there. So this is different. A-list time, Jesse. A-list time. We're going to honor A-list. Keep it going. I bet. Here's my guess.
Yeah.
I bet they're going to do it on the show in the afternoon.
Yeah.
But either way, we're still going to do it. And okay, we're going to keep it going because it's a staple on this show. That's the key. It's on this show. It's a staple. Are you a big video game guy, Jesse?
Yes.
Oh, you are?
More than I'd like to admit.
Oh.
But I guess I just did.
What's wrong with that?
I don't know. It just feels like, you know, I'm over 30 now. I don't know how much I should be playing video games.
That's all okay.
Time, but you know what? It's a hobby. You know, my game is FIFA right now. I'm locked in on FIFA.
There you go. So mostly sports games or a variety?
Mostly sports games.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
I'm a sports guy.
So that's okay. You know what? We need a lot of nerds in the world, all right? We need nerds in the world. That's good. I'm a video game guy too. Mostly sports games, always been that way. Austin Matthews apparently a bit of a video game guy too, here and there.
Of course he is.
The game of choice is obviously NHL. He had this to say on a recent podcast that he did. I found it interesting in terms of who he's had the opportunity, the privilege of whipping in NHL.
Your boy Bieber, he's a big Chell fan. Have you ever played with him?
I've got a good story about that. Oh. I played him. I kind of waxed him.
Oh.
And we haven't played since.
Oh.
Yeah.
He doesn't
like when I bring it up. I think he actually rage quit. I'm not going to lie.
Wow. So Justin Bieber rage quits Chell games.
JB, I've got your number in Chell. I haven't played since I played you. And it was an absolute shellacking. So come and find me and we'll get this rematch going.
Did he get some free Drew House gear too from that?
Yeah, probably.
Like, I mean, that's the way to go if you're Austin Matthews. My question off of this, Jesse, is there any celebrity, if you could pick any celebrity, who would you want to play if you had the opportunity? One game, NHL 23. I think that's the one that's on now. Obviously, 24 will be coming out next season. One celebrity, who would you pick? Who would you want to play against?
Probably Tiger Woods in some form of the old Tiger game.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
That was the game that I played growing up, probably the most, was the Tiger Woods PGA Tour games.
Nice.
And he's far and away my favorite athlete of all time. It's not really even close. So when I think about who I'd want to play and who I'd want to be, like, I think if you were to say that you beat Tiger Woods in anything, that would be pretty impressive. And I don't know if we're in the same room or if it's like we're talking to each other over a headset or whatever in different locations. But like, if I can find a way to set that up and beat Tiger, that's where I'm going.
That'd be a pretty nice feather in the cap for sure. Okay. So I was thinking along the lines of NHL in particular. And one that popped in mind, it's a guy that was actually featured in the game a few years ago, Snoop Dogg.
Mm.
I feel like it'd be a fun time to play a video
that
game
would
with
be
Snoop.
Fun.
Now, he might be smoking a thing or two. I won't indulge, but he might, and that's okay. I think it would be a lot of fun. So Snoop Dogg, for me, would be my pick. But credit to Austin Matthews for taking care of Biebs on the sticks there. I have a trivia question for you as well.
Okay.
All right. Let's see. Let's test your – it's sports. Let's see how we do here. In North America, Jesse, every year there are only 2 days on the sports calendar when none of the big four sports are playing and have games. What are the 2 days?
2 days on the sports calendar where nobody plays.
Yep. And it's for a reason we're doing it now. But, I mean, can you guess the 2 days? There's only two.
Yeah. It's where nobody plays.
Where there's none of the big four sports happening. No games.
It's the day before the All-Star game, the MLB All-Star game?
Yeah.
And Christmas Eve?
No. You're close. You got one half. Day before and day after.
Day after,
the All-Star game.
People play on Christmas Eve?
Christmas Eve, Christmas Day.
It's not like I've been in the sports industry for like 15 years.
I've attended. I can attest. Even Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve, I remember attending games, and the NBA does it. I think the NHL is off, but the NBA will do it where they have those early games in the day.
Right.
And they have it as like a matinee leading in, or they have that little 6 p.m. start so that you get everybody can get home nicely.
My thought process was that I know that they play on Christmas Day.
Yep.
And I feel like they take a break the day before, but obviously I'm wrong. But you know what? What I'll chalk that up to is it being 6:53 in the morning. I'm not usually up at this hour, so there you go.
I'm wide awake. This is prime time. This is prime time for us. But yes, so there we go. All of that came to my mind yesterday, too, because I was thinking it's always a missed opportunity for the CFL to never have a game on the Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
This year, it's week 6 of the season. They have Hamilton and Edmonton on Thursday, and then Toronto and Montreal on Friday. Right. No game on the Wednesday, where it's a standalone. They would be the focus of the sports universe because there's nothing else happening on that day in particular.
Wait a second. What's your video game?
My video game?
Uh-huh.
Right now, it's probably the show.
The show is a great game.
NBA 2K has always been another one.
Have you done a derby yet with the named participants?
No. I haven't done it with this crew yet.
I did it.
Oh, did you?
I did it over the weekend.
Oh, nice.
Who won it? I think it was... it wasn't Vladdy. I think it was probably Pete Alonso.
Okay. Makes sense.
But you know what? It's so easy to hit home runs with him because he's like 99 power. And the guy treats the home run derby like Joey Chestnut treats his competitions.
Hey.
Like it's out of control. Like the guy he lives for home run derbies. He circles it on the calendar. And he says, "I'm gonna make sure I am peaking for the home run derby," which is incredible. So yeah, I think it was Pete Alonso who won mine.
Joey Chestnut, 16-time Mustard Bell champion, he won the 8th straight last week. He'd be on He's already on a remarkable run, historically good run. He had 1 year. There was an anomaly. Mm-hmm. His name was Matt Stoney, this guy from California that beat him, and I rue the day where Joey Chestnut would be sitting on a streak of like 15, 16 in a row here, which is pretty crazy.
What happened to Kobayashi? Where is he?
He's not allowed to compete in this thing.
He's out?
He's not permitted. He's getting older too. He's out of the game. But yes, there's a big rule where he's not permitted to compete in the Nathans.
He's out of the game.
He's out of the game.
Godfather of competitive eating, as I look it up on Wikipedia.
Yeah, he's out of the game. He's out of the game right now. Joey Chestnut is the king of competitive eating. On the other side, I don't know if he's a king of competitive eating. Probably not. Or if he's a fan of it at all. But Aaron Rose.
Nice.
Big basketball guy. Aaron Rose, Raptors reporter from Sports Illustrated. He's going to join us on the other side of the break. Sportsnet 590 Fan, the Fan Morning Show. We'll be back after this.